welcome. This is Why Life Is. I'm Niles McFlower. And tonight we have basically a redo, at least of the first 40 minutes of last week's show. We had a lot of technical problems, which we think we have corrected. And we're going to go over those 40 minutes that we did, because there was a lot of interruptions and other problems, even during the time I was on. So tonight's show is going to be in defense of individual liberty, life, and property, which was last week's show, but this is going to be a redo of sorts, because I never redo exactly anything the same way, but it's going to be pretty close of the first 40 minutes of last week's show. Again, this is a 2.5-hour broadcast, so we're really talking about a small amount of redundancy, and most of it will be clearer and easier to understand in any case. We lost the signal a number of times, even while we were doing that show, and it just became impossible to continue. We're trying a whole different arrangement tonight, different connections with the engineering part of this station, and some new wiring. One of the people that helped, a fellow named Moses, may be listening right now, and it has, I think, improved the signal significantly. That's for all of you to find out and let us know. But at the same time, it's good for the engineering side of this because they have a much clearer signal to work with, which always makes it better for them as well. So everybody's going to, this is hopefully a win-win-win. We're going to all be happy with the way this turned out. So what do we mean by in defense of individual liberty, life, and property? Well, I'm going to start off with the concept of individuality. This is probably the most important word of the whole title. And actually, it's a fairly long title for the way in terms of the way I usually make a title of a show. The reason is that it has to define itself in the following ways. Individuality means that the self of a person becomes a critical element in when we are discussing the question of defense of liberty, life, and property. That has to do with the distinguishment between what I will call the God side of things, or the enlightened side of things, or for those who prefer the word creator, or whatever word fits for your understanding. That's what I'm talking about, that there's a part of humanity that resembles its own creator. And it isn't found in lower life forms that we are familiar with. Even those that we love and that may love us, they don't have the same sense of individuality. Now, those that are very close to us, we call them pets usually, can gain a little sense of individuality from being in contact with us, with humans. But generally, we'll call it wild life forms, and certainly lower life forms do not have a sense of individuality, which comes from the development of self. A self is really a part that is like the spark that comes from our own soul and connects us to our creator. It's why we have a sense of God. It's not only the connection with our soul, but the two senses of spirit that we have that tells us that there is a creator, and how we can co-create by creating more light or virtue in the form around us all the time. We have that ability. We're born with it. How do I know this? How can I say this with great, we'll say, certainty? It's because if you can find, if anybody can find, any kind of life form lower than the human that is building churches and out extolling the importance of loving God and being close with God, and that God loves it as well, then I may change. But I haven't found it yet. As a matter of fact, they can love each other. And there's no question that animals love each other. They do so because they're connected to a thing called a group management or group soul kind of situation. But they don't have an individual soul. They're not related in that way to their creator because they aren't supposed to be yet. we are the beings in this world that have this unique gift, this very important element that makes us really, in a way, special, but it also makes us more responsible, very responsible, for the promotion of there being a creator for all of existence, all of life. It's really an important element when we try to defend this issue, because there is an attack on it right now. What is that attack? Well, the dark side, the side that is part of humanity. It isn't naturally in lower life forms. Even in the advanced animals, they're by nature not dark. They can take on some of our darkness if we torture them and teach them how to fight or destroy something or whatever, but they don't have it naturally. Yes, they can have anger and they can express it in various ways, but they don't have the part that wants to destroy their creator, because they don't think there is a creator, because they don't have that sense of it, and they don't have a sense of self that reinforces it every day they exist. They also don't concern themselves with what particularly happens after death. As a matter of fact, if they did, they'd probably be doing the same thing we do, you know, having rituals or ceremonies, we'll call it, for people who have died, be it awake or otherwise. And then at the same time, they would have funerals, and they would even bury their departed ones. We don't see that as a general rule taking place. Now, the interesting thing about this is this all fits together in a package that I can kind of say is that we are in the image of our Creator. And if you look into most biblical interpretations, I'm not just talking about the Christian biblical interpretation, although that's a really important one for many people, but there's lots of other ones, they all say the same thing. They say we were created in the image of our Creator, and that image includes the idea of self. So, and soul, and there's another part of it. The soul is like the progenitor of the creation of self. It's a fascinating thing. Self is the ability, by the way, to be conscious of things outside of the immediate presence that we exist within. We can be amazingly conscious of things that we don't have any tangible reality connection to. Because there's the ability to have abstract reasoning and abstract creation of imagination, a lot of other factors. And those things are sorely lacking in animals and, to some extent, really dark people. They have some level of consciousness, but it's limited by the fact that they continually want to either deny the existence of God, and that doesn't mean if you're an atheist you're necessarily evil, by the way, but it does mean that you're more vulnerable to the concepts that the dark side wants to promote. It's odd. That dark side wants to say that God doesn't exist for the rest of us, we'll call it edification and belief, but it knows that God does exist. But it wants to hurt or destroy God because it wants to be more powerful than God. It's a weird kind of thinking. I know. Who could be so silly as to have that? Well, it's pretty much them, you know. And really, this doesn't mean that everybody has a nemesis character running around after them or something. This dark element is really relatively small in terms of the whole life spectrum in the universe. But it's not so small here on this particular in this particular world. Our world is really focused on the, we'll call it, conflict between the dark side and the rest of humanity. And it really is a human conflict. It's because in this world we're going through an experiment. The experiment is to see if that monastic or the thinking side of humans can become aware of evil when evil is using tricky thinking to convince us that evil doesn't even exist, much less is it out to get us or do anything wrong. And this test is happening, unfortunately, in a very, very, we'll say, contrived using a lot of propaganda and other methodologies. It's highly Machiavellian. What does that mean? It means he end justifies the means in most of its behaviors. But it also has infiltrated, for the most part, the governmental part of societies. Why is that? Well, because the dark side wants to take creation and turn it into a substitute thing, which we call power. It wants to remove creation and make everything how powerful you are, and forget about whether or not others are free to create, because it doesn't want there to be freedom. It wants to subject and control others. And it needs power to do that, and it has to eliminate creation because creation leads to freedom and vice versa. So it has to do this. It is sort of like compelled, you might say. And that's what's happening in this world. We're in a contest, you might say, between having enough freedom to be creative and a creation that is intended is that we create more light or more spiritual thinking in the world, more spiritual behaviors in the world, interactions that are spiritual. It means that it has some element of God's own thought involved in everything we're doing. That's what I mean by the word spiritual. And so, fascinating as it sounds, this conflict has actually been set up as like a kind of test. Not a test to see whether or not we're good or bad. I mean, I certainly some people believe that. And I mean, in a simplistic way, you know, it's sort of the idea of Santa Claus or something. But it's really not that. It's something much, much deeper. It's about the ability for humans to accelerate as fast as they possibly can, their ability to think and reason and still maintain the position that there is a creator, and the creator is here to encourage the, we'll call it, virtuous qualities in life and for us to help life to grow, because life is the growth of its own creator, God. And that's the purpose of life, is that it freely creates. Everybody thinks, well, there can't be freedom because God is all-powerful and all-everything, then that means there can't be any room for anything other there, that everything is predetermined. But God is not all-powerful because that's darkness. God is all-freeing, all-loving. Those two things, yes, but all-powerful, it removes power from the equation. That allows room, unfortunately, for the dark side to move in. But it does so that the life that it is the creator of initially and helps to further that creation does so freely by having free choice. Almost every major religion, believe it or not, teaches that. That's a strange thing, because I know a lot of people of one religion say, oh, the other religion doesn't allow you to do this or that. They all have their quirky natures, and they all have some degree of determinism creeping in. But the purest elements of the religion don't. They actually have that idea of freedom. And there has to be freedom, or else the whole thing becomes a puppet show. If God is truly exercising all power over everything, well, then nothing would be a creation. It would only be a replication of how God decided everything to be in the first place. And then one would have to basically say, why bother? And of course, that's the dark side. The dark side says, well, even if there is a God, why would you want a God that determines everything for you beforehand? If you really want to be free, follow us. Of course, it's the turning everything inside out. They reverse what's really the truth in spiritual thinking. So, okay, all that to talk about defense of individualness. Individualness, then, is the key to understanding this process that we are in, which is a grand experiment here in this world. They're out of the world, probably more than we can count. They aren't the same by any stretch, and some are radically different, because they don't have the same level of conflict about the things I'm talking about. We actually choose to be here. I know this sounds so hard, but even the choice of our own soul to exist within this realm, the soul exists in another dimension, and we're connected to it. We are free in relationship to the soul, but the soul was free to have us be in existence. And so we have to look at this thing as just constantly more and more freedom for everything that is living to make the choices it does. Now, you could say, well, what would my soul be doing if I wasn't here on Earth? Well, it could be in a different world where this kind of adversity may not exactly or may not even come close to existing. This is a tough place, and we're tough folks, even the us as the incarnate of our soul. We're tougher than probably some other human-type life forms in other places. I know some place people don't believe there's any other life here except here on Earth. Well, you know, that's an evolving thing that gradually changes as we find more and more evidence that there probably is life elsewhere. But and it takes time for us to get used to it because we're so ethnocentric. We believe that everything revolves around Earth. Well, it does for the things that we're here for, here about, and that's really a true statement. But it doesn't just be, you know, to say that there is no other place that humans exist, humankind exists. I mean, it may not be exactly like us, but they're pretty close. Because we're in the image of God, and God is everywhere. I don't care what you think about what God is. If there is any other kind of life, my belief and my thinking is that that life is still part of God's growth, still part of it. Doesn't matter where it is. The neighborhood is less important than the good that's happening. Okay, so let's then say, well, what is the opposite of individual then? So do we have a kind of context of what the dark side tries to, we'll call it manufacture. And the opposite of individual turns out to be a thing, which you hear a lot about. It's called group processes. That usually means something called, in today's lingo, but it's been around since about 1875, a guy named Colonel Frank came up with it, called social justice. Now, what is that? Well, it's something that came out of the progressive movement and the socialistic movement. Frank started the socialistic movement in England. And it means that it really became popular at the turn, after the turn of the 20th century. And what it means is that everybody should have the same amount of liberty, life, and property if there's going to be justice. Well, that's a problem, because if everybody's going to have the same, there can't be room for individuality. The expression of individuality, by its very definition, means that in a complex system, like a whole country of millions of people, particularly if you have hundreds of millions of people, there is going to be major differences between individuals. Unless you do something that eventually leads to what is called communism, which means that everybody has the same everything, and even if they do a different job or labor, the results of that labor are supposed to be equally divvied up, and each person has a right to the same. The problem with that is the combination that produces slavery. And the reason it's enslaving is because it reduces the right to be free and be creative, and it makes a system of power and control. The power and control is usually coming from the government, but it could be theoretically some other autocratic system. I mean, it could be a religious type thing, or it could be a massive industrial, you know, complex thing or something. But you know, most of the time it is government. And then those that create that system blame it on religions and blame it on industry or something else that is doing this communal problem, when it's really the government that's doing it, and it tries to point a finger. They try to point a finger at somebody else. And then they're out in the streets screaming about it. And it doesn't mean that, some religions and some industry doesn't have a ploy to try to gain power over others and force everybody to be enslaved. But in general, that isn't true, particularly if there's a thing called free market. Now, free market has to be protected to some extent. You can't have a situation where, as happened in the 19th century, the latter half of it, where huge monopolistic kinds of businesses eventually eclipsed all other forms of industry, so that it was sort of like they were demi-governments. They even had so much effect that sometimes they controlled the government and even told the government what to do. Sometimes they bailed out the government and controlled it through just lending it enough money to survive. These kinds of, we'll call it, methods were eventually fought and succeeded against by the adoption of anti-monopolistic laws, which already kind of existed, but were not being used properly. And once that happened, it seemed to correct it. Now, in terms of religions, it's been less so that religions have grown to such a magnitude that they have had such power. Although some people point at Christianity as being a monolithic beast that has disallowed other more smaller types of thinking religions to be available. And I don't really see it that way. I see that the majority of people have adopted Christianity more in the United States, more from the values standpoint, and the idea that Christianity has maintained, for the most part, individuality within its structure in the belief in Jesus Christ being a part of God and the other two parts of God, helping to develop a concept of self in humanity. So, I mean, this is not a bad thing, but it was, for some people, a heavy-handed issue if they wanted to have a religion that had some elements different than the common understandings. That has some merit to it, but in general, there hasn't been as much of this as some atheistic people might make you believe is true. They've exaggerated some elements of it. Is Christmas a holiday? It is, but it's no more a different holiday than some other holidays, which extol certain people. Martin Luther King is one person, but most recent holidays. But it has a celebration that is does not have to necessarily have only a religious connotation to it. But regardless of that, there are people who disagree with that and want there to be a further split. Here is the point. When you start splitting this, if you get into a quote-unquote pseudo-Christian church that says there's only social justice and there is no effectively, therefore, individuality, then we can say that the true individuality of Christianity is being attacked, and the defense to it would be to call out those religious orders that claim to be truly a Christian religion and say, well, without the individual nature of the soul, then nobody can be individually saved, and everybody is then collectively controlled by some outside external force, which, of course, then eventually becomes the progressive or communistic government that these people usually truly believe in. So that's the problem. We have a mental war going on, and most people don't understand that they are involved in it and don't realize it's going on all around them all the time. Some of it has become quite, heated up since this present administration, administration federally, has taken over, because they strongly believe in a progressive and a social justice idea. And the majority of people in control and power either are leaning toward or are abject communists. This is a serious problem, because they're using that power that they have that is supposed to be to administrate a government that's of, for, and by the people to be against those people who want individual liberty, life, and property. That's a serious problem, and it can lead to very serious consequences. Some of those consequences involves part of how the dark side works. It seeks to encourage corruption and cronyism, and it is prone to continuously create propaganda, which is lies, that seem to be truthful, deliberately, cunningly look like they're truthful, when they are the exact opposite. They are as dark as you can virtually become. And that's what the present system that we're in is. This same system has been used many times in Italy and of course, Nazi Germany. And its use is really quite old, but it's become more polished and much more, we'll say, mentally sophisticated in the last 100 years or so. This makes the crisis that we're in the very center focus of why this planet is fighting evil so much, and we succumb to it so often, because this is the experiment. Can we, as humans, recognize that we have an individual self that is connected to a soul that's individual, that is connected to a creator who seeks there to be creation and freedom on an individual basis for us? And if we don't recognize that, we are probably going to be enslaved, and then eventually life ends. It ends for a lot of reasons. The first is that economically, if you start at the lowest element of it, economically, economy is based upon the free exchange of goods and services. When you stop the freedom part, which also removes the individual part, then the government becomes socialistic, and the next step is the government becomes communistic. And the process has been done countless times. It even goes back into long periods of time before history, before communism was even a word. But a similar kind of thing was done, but usually using tyrannical monarchs or emperors. Now, it doesn't need that. As a matter of fact, it works best without that. It really works best with a whole machinery or government process where each person in the government adds collectively to the enslavement of everybody else. And eventually, the enslavers can be the IRS, the EPA, the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms people, and some court systems, and, of course, legislation that is controlled more by the dark side than by the light. And anything the light does is just thrown away because it doesn't get to become law. And eventually law in the legislation of law becomes unnecessary because more and more the, we'll call it executive part in our government, but we'll call it the leaders of the government, use unilateral decisions, oftentimes hyped as being necessary or not being an exclusion to law, but being an adjunct to existing law, which is always a lie, by the way, as the means of ruling other people, we'll call it, of governing. And they called the word they usually use is governance in that context, if you listen carefully to the speech. So when all this is going on, individuality is being removed. People are becoming group members of a society, and their group status is determined by those in power, not by their own creative efforts. This is where the economy is the first point of attack. They also attack religion by trying to get religions to become group conscious of the soul. So the soul is like the soul of an animal, and make us like animals being run by dictatorial system. And, of course, that eventually eliminates God, by the way. God becomes a pseudo a being, and the people who are the heads of the church connect with the government, and eventually they further rule each other, rule the people through another form of power. The power is in belief in God. And then it moves from that to science. And we've seen this in science going on all around us. The thinkers in science usually have a hard time getting to the truth. Science reinvents itself in almost every discipline about every 5 years or so. And the reason for that is because it seldom is very truthful. Because humans don't think very well in terms of truth at the present time. Scientists like to believe they are always thinking in truth when they're about 95% on an average of the time thinking in falsity. Well, the falsity, again, has to do with the rejection of there being God, which is a big problem for many scientists. But it goes a lot further than that. Let's say they were truly atheistic, but at the same time trying to find the truth by being open-minded and humble. That would still work out. In other words, those scientists that have that combination will eventually find the path of light and that there really is a God. But so many don't do that. So many have high levels of egotism and a kind of, we'll call it, closed-mindedness that is only relegated and open to a path that they have invented that they decide is proper science. You get published. Other people read what's published. Then it's determined whether they can replicate some of the things you say in some experimental model. But if they can or can't, it doesn't matter, because at first people have to even be willing to do that. And if they don't like you, or if they think your theory threatens what they already believe, it can languish for decades or even half century or more. You may die before anybody even bothers to look at what you're saying or doing. This is the problem, because the individual is relegated to a weaker position. They'll always say, who is it that's backing you up? What institution recognizes you? What publication has published? What people are replicating your experiments in some controlled fashion? It goes on and on. And before long, science becomes not any better than most religions. It actually is a religion itself, because it believes only in itself and not in being open-minded. And yet it doesn't see that every 5-10 years, everything it thought was wrong. Oh, well, start over again. This is so strange. You would think people would finally get it, but they have very short-term memory about how mistaken they were just years before. Okay, what's the other process? Well, we have a lot of expression in the arts. And, you know, the interesting thing is that there's so much, we'll call it, I call it pseudo-art, but there's so much of the, the emotionally exciting element of art that is expressed here in the United States and a few other countries. It's not probably as strong in some places as it is here. But what does it mean? Well, it means that in order to be found to be an artist, you have to sometimes be, it helps to be an atheist in some places. And it also means that beauty is no longer observed as being of value. So in other words, ugliness could be just as important as beauty to the people in the arts in where I'm talking about, like a first world country like the United States. First world just means they put a lot of time, money, and energy into the art, but they don't at the same time have a value of how much beauty is in it. Beauty causes everybody else's senses to become closer to understanding and seeing God, or seeing and understanding God. That doesn't happen here. People could care less about that. As a matter of fact, most of the art is created away from God and against the concept of God. Not all of it, but a lot of it. And so they hook up again with this whole progressivism governmental thing, and it becomes another kind of false value that art that is ugly has the same benefit or value to as art that is beautiful. Well, that's really bad news. That screws up things pretty royally. And if you really wanted to look at what about the structure of banking and military structures and the big parts of society, some people call this the third-rate energy type of society. Well, those things, again, a military can be there for defense, which is what we're talking about. To defend something means that you're to protect and preserve that which is there, and also to help it to become, in its own creative way, able to grow and to become something greater than it was. That's what defense should be. But defense oftentimes becomes offense, or it may become literally a means of further, we'll say, wealth gathering by those who are seeking in a system where a lot of money is expended to become corruptly involved in it. That's part of our problem. Banking becomes in existence only for people of great wealth, but not to help the society to grow in creation. It may even stifle creation, because in order to have a relationship with somebody where you get more money based upon the value of an idea or the value of an ability to create something, it becomes who you know and how much wealth you have had and how much power you have besides just wealth. So the powerful and the rich have the benefit of banking, and the rest of the people have the disadvantage of the banks being against them, and maybe even used to gain more money and resources by even the services that banks sometimes provide being very costly and literally forcing people to pay for things that they shouldn't even have to pay for. So you get into that kind of area where and banking starts doing, we'll call it, illegal, corrupt loans, because the people that are involved with the banks are that way. And the banking system invariably goes through cycles of failure, because it's not based upon creating more of a creator. It's based upon a dark system. Wow. Well, I'm going to take a little break right now, so that we'll come back. I'll talk a bit about education and how the governmental part of all of this is a canopy to limit individuality. And then we're going to talk about liberty, life, and property. And then we're going to go into how all of this can be improved upon. And from where we are at the present time, which is not too good. But we'll get to that. And I can talk to you about some things that I've noticed that might be of value, and also what I think is going on within the next year or two that may be the crossroad of where we're headed. So we'll kind of look at that and see if that makes sense as well. And we're going to be back in about 2.5 minutes, give or take, from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel. Kind of. About romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is. I'm your host. Well, I'm actually just Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about in defense of individual liberty, life, and property. I was really, selective in trying to talk mostly about the individual aspect, even more than I did last week when we had so many problems technically and the show couldn't be finished. The reason for that is that the individual side of things is critical if we're going to be successful in this world in creating a more godly place. And that's the ballgame. I know a lot of people say, well, aren't we here to kind of, you know, plod through life and each of us do something a little bit more adventurous or this or that? And that's not my understanding. My understanding is we're here with a much greater purpose that involves our own creative efforts, and it's eventually recognizing that we are here to co-create with our Creator if we can do that, if we can find that in ourselves. Now, some people can't or don't, and that's a choice they have, and they can make that choice because they're free to do so. And that's what I was talking about earlier. Now, what do I mean by the word liberty? Liberty is the ability to freely exercise the freedoms I'm talking about in ways that does not prevent others from doing the same. And maybe if we're really talking about the full meaning of liberty, it helps others to do the same. So you've got kind of two levels of liberty. The first level is, okay, I'm going to do my thing. And I won't inhibit or try, I'll prevent myself from inhibiting other people from doing their thing. That's fine. And if that's where you're at, that's one level of existence. But there's a better one. The better one is to not only do your own thing creatively, which is individuality, but at the same time help others to do the same in a similar way. So they are exercising their individuality. They're not part of a common collective seeking social justice so they can sit around and live off of others and or to enjoy what others have created without having to do the same for themselves. This is the epitome, we'll say, of what the conflict is. Liberty is really a very important word. Now, there's some people who are libertarians who see that as a governmental structural design. And if the government was doing what I just explained, helping people to do that, then the world would be a better place, and particularly the government here in the United States would be a more true-to-the-Constitution government. So they usually are very strongly constitutionalist. That has tremendous value. The problem is that the present day values of the administration and its concept of the Constitution, the President of the United States at the present time, is anti-Constitution. I'm not saying that because I think it. I'm saying it because he said it. think the Constitution, he taught it for years at Harvard, he thinks the Constitution is an archaic instrument that does not express what he calls a progressive view of life. Now, what is a progressive view of life? Well, he says it includes the following things: social justice. It includes taking care of the poor folk who haven't had a chance because the people on top won't let them. It includes a thing called redistribution, or the taking of property and wealth from those who have more and giving it to those who have less. And it also advocates that the life of people, including their ability to choose their own care medically and what they can and cannot eat, where they can and cannot live, and how and when they can be educated in certain ways, all is under the view and decision, ultimately, decision and control of the government. This is his understanding of what life in America is supposed to be about. And if the Constitution argues against that, then he's not in favor of the Constitution, which he says he's not, in various ways that involve the things I just talked about. Now, some people are going to say, well, I like Obama. He's a nice guy. He seems like, you know, when he talks, he just sounds sweet to me. Well, you know, some people have been able to sound very nice to other people, but the things they do are ruthless and untruthful. In other words, once he says one thing and does something else the next 5 minutes or something. And in addition, the very nature of all of the views of a president of the United States rests upon his defending and upholding the Constitution of the United States. If he takes an oath to do that and then gives a speech within 2 weeks of that time, this is true, really happened, of stating that that's not what he's going to do and doesn't believe it should be done, you've got a real incongruent nature to the idea of what an oath is and what truth is and what a person in great power, huge power, should be having. So these are important things. Now, there's so much more to it than just a president, because he's chosen a whole enormous number of people who think almost identical to him. Some of them a bit more radical in some respects, but maybe not. Depending upon, I don't think he's as much an ideologue as, unfortunately, in some ways, he's a corrupt, using that word in the true meaning of it, a corrupt, we'll call it, potential tyrant. And that's the danger. Tyranny is really not an ideology, unless you think it in terms of that, but tyranny is the clear desire to have power and exercise it to enslave and control large numbers of other people through whatever means achieves that goal. And it is anti-law and anti-constitution in its nature. So it doesn't respect, or it tries to destroy, law and constitution. It upholds laws that help it, but it tends to destroy and or, we'll say, contort laws that interfere with it. Okay, so we have this going on in terms of our liberty, and our life is being controlled to the point where the ability to stay alive when the economy goes down the tubes, which it is, it's going down the tubes because the money's becoming worthless. The whole methodology of tyranny is to destroy the strengths of that which you want to control. And one of the strengths is a strong free market economy. If you change it from a free market system to a socialistic system, and then you devalue the money by printing 10 times, whatever, more money than there is value to it, you then destroy the whole system. It all comes down. And if you want to look at that, you can look at other countries where this has been true. It happened in Germany, it happened in England, it happened all throughout the world. And, of course, in communist countries, it's almost the way of life. So without a free market system, the inevitable result is the destruction of economy and the subjection of the people into a life of slavery, because without there being sufficient resources for people even to have food, shelter, and clothing, they become, in many cases, timid and afraid, and it's easier to enslave them. All right, so we have that going on. Now, let's talk about the question of property. Property is something different than just economy. Property is the right to have things, and that those things include money, and to be able to keep them and use them in a way that allows a person to be, by their own choosing, either creative or non-creative, but to use in by their own standards and without encumbrances. Well, that's going away. If you look at Obamacare or the Affordable Medical Act, or Affordable Medicine, it's totally unaffordable, right? But if you look at that, the rationale of putting so much effort into doing that first does the most damage to the system and economy, but it also removes the right to have and hold property. Now, why is that? Well, because someone else is telling you what kind of services, we call medicine, but what kind of services they are entitled to, what they can and can't have, and what they have to spend. And in most cases, they're spending only a fixed sum that they can't afford otherwise for anything else, and even the anything else is being eliminated anyway because of other laws that prevent the practice by others of a free medical system. So the bottom line of this is enslavement, because property is being removed. I'm using this as an example. It's being done in many other parts of the economy. But the biggest part that was singled out, which has been free, is now what we could call health care. Health care is far more than medical science, and it's being limited to only medical science, and if you try to do anything else, you're not going to be able to. And worse than that, it eliminates the ability for the individual to determine how their health care dollars are used. They're going to be used up for a system that is corrupt, a system that is ineffective, and that is deadly. And as you get older, the system will be a system in which eventually you'll be euthanized through regulation. So this is the way of the coming system and the future. This is the path of darkness. It's not the only thing by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a big one, and it's the jewel that had to be gotten at all cost in the first year of this administration. It had to happen that way in order to achieve the rest of the goals, which is to enslave everybody. To enslave the freest country in the world, you have to do something big, and this is as big as you can get. Now, you could say, well, what if I just refuse to participate? Well, you could refuse to participate, but the IRS will take the money from you anyway. They'll go right to your bank and take it. And they will take it out of your wages or your earnings. They'll take it out some way. But besides that, besides taking the money, if you want to go, let's say you have some money someplace else, and you want to go ahead and get some other kind of health care, you can't. It won't be available. There will be nobody to go to get health care. There'll be no hospitals, no anybody that isn't part of a system that will prevent you from having the kind of health care other than that which is dictated, and which more and more will be rationed and eventually will lead to euthanizing older people, and they're very sick, and in reducing the quality of all life, all human life. Now, that's pretty bad. It's not the only thing that's really a serious problem, but it certainly is a biggie. And we went down this so fast because we didn't see the darkness. It isn't because we're stupid. It's because we're not conscious enough to see darkness and see evil. And this is the test. When you don't see it, it's going to wham you so hard that for generations people will suffer from this. How many? I'd say 3. That's 60 years. But, you know, it could change in 6 months if people were to wake up real suddenly and do something about it. I'm praying. But prayer alone may not be sufficient for this kind of darkness that is honest. Another thing that has to take place is you've got to remove the ability for people to believe that they have a right to defend themselves. Remember, tonight's show is in defense. One way you can enslave people, besides just taking away their economic interests and their freedom to create in various ways, is to say, you don't have a right to defend yourself. Your life can only be defended by the government, and only by the government when it chooses to have the time and the ability to do something about it, which is almost never. So ultimately, you don't have a right to defend yourself, your life. You don't have a right to defend your liberty and your property. The defense of liberty usually is the hardest thing to do, because the defense is almost always against the government. So the founders of the United States thought about this very hard, and they had quite a bit of disagreement, and eventually said that the only defense that the people have against the government that is going wayward, as ours might be doing so tonight, is to have and hold arms. Now, why? Are people better at defending themselves than an army that the government may have? Well, to begin with, there was supposed to be no army the federal government was supposed to have that would ever be used against its own people. That has kind of gone down the tubes, by the way. And in addition, the idea of everybody having the right to defend themselves is the key to people standing up to the government. It isn't that they can win if everybody gets out their semi-automatic gun and is going to stand in a big line across the whole nation and say, you can't come in, or you can't take this away from me, and tanks are rolling, drones are on their way, and helicopters are flying in. No, you're not going to win that battle. But the way to win it is that you realize that this is a state of mind more than it is having the equipment to defeat the government. And so what the first concern was in making sure that people had the right to have and bear arms was not to defend themselves against other people, but to defend themselves against the government. Now, I know that people don't know that by and large today. Some people do, who have read the Constitution, and particularly if you've read some of the people who wrote about the creation of the Constitution, especially the part about there being rights for people. So liberty has with it the connection of self-defense, but it goes first to the government and then the defense of life and property, which is more, we'll say, very individualistic, because what that means is you have a right, we all have a right, for self-defense, which is the same as saying individual defense. The words are synonymous in this situation. And therefore, the government, police, whoever, cannot necessarily defend you from any act of force, evil force, dark force against you. You have to be able to be allowed to do that yourself, and that requires weapons. And that's why they say you have a right to have and bear arms. Now, why didn't they define what kind of arms? Because they didn't need to, because if you read what their intention was, the right to have and bear arms shall not be infringed upon, and the infringement would be to remove that right below the level of those who have force against you on an individual basis, not what the government could do. So you don't have a right to have helicopters and atomic weapons, but you do have a right to have whatever kind of weapon that those who are on the dark side would attack you on an individual basis. Whatever that level is, you have a right to have something equal to that level of, we'll say, power or control over your existence. So it doesn't make sense to give somebody a single-shot rifle and have criminals running around with 30-shot rifles. Whether it's legal or not, it makes no difference because to the criminal, it's not going to help. So as long as the government cannot keep criminals from having certain weapons, then the individual person has a right to have weapons equal to those of the criminals. Now, what happens if the government says, well, we've been 99% successful in keeping criminals from having machine guns? And they tell then the people, you do not have a right to have machine guns because we're 99%. You know what? That worked in the 1930s, and that argument worked in the 1930s, and machine guns were outlawed because most of the criminals were prevented from getting them. That's a good thing. But in the present day, if you were to try to do that with a lot of other kinds of weapons, only the people who are law-abiding people would not have, say, semi-automatic guns or other kinds of weapons that give them the same tactical advantage that a criminal would have. And the reason for that is the proliferation of the type of weapon. So if that, and that's called the common standard. It was recognized by the Supreme Court in several decisions over the last 20 or 30 years. But they say, well, look, the common standard of weapon that people choose to have is this. It's commonly used, and that means criminals commonly have it as well, and so people should be allowed to have that as a choice of weapon. Some cities have ignored that standard and said, well, the criminals may have much more seriously violent weapons, but we're going to let you have a much less effective weapon to defend yourself with. Well, you're not going to defend yourself. You're going to just get killed. And that's the government interfering with the defense of your life and property. It's also going against the concept of liberty. So ultimately, there is a rational way to decide this thing because it's already been done. I mean, this argument has already come up and it's been decided upon by the Supreme Court. But there are millions of people that live under a different system in various cities and some states that says, no, you can't have that weapon. That's too many shots. You can only have 7 or 10. Oh, the criminal might have 30 or 50. That's too bad for you. Well, if the second reason to defend yourself is to defend your life and property, you can't do that. And then they also have outlawed many other things besides guns. They've outlawed many other kinds of weapons, which actually make even more sense to have, and yet you can't have them. Wow, that's a weird thing. Yeah, so the more you do that, the more crime increases in those areas, if the logic of everything I just described is correct. And guess what? When you look at the numbers, the highest level of crime is in exactly those places where they have infringed on the right to defend yourself, having a weapon equal to the weapons that could be used against you. In theory, you could be greater than, and you'd still be protected. But the government usually doesn't want it to be too much greater, because that may add more fuel for the whole system to keep climbing. I can understand it. But there is rational understandings that have been determined for eons, for many decades, about these issues. So it isn't like they haven't been broached. It's just that they're ignored by those who want to infringe on the right for us to defend ourselves. That's a serious problem. Now, do I think that everybody should be armed and therefore walk around and have some means? No. It's an individual right of defense. If a person does not believe and not think that they have a need for defense, or not feel that they do, they don't need to carry guns. They don't need to own a gun. But they should not be infringing on the right of others to do so, because that's unconstitutional, and it leads to tyranny, and it leads to enslavement. So it's not just, we'll say, the smaller element, like, oh, well, I got to keep my stuff. Oh, I got to keep my life. That's a pretty big thing anyway, by the way. But it also leads to the concept of liberty. So it's all part of a big, big thing. And it's the second most important right that was decided upon as being a trusted and irreversible right given to the people. And who gave it to the people? The people did. This is where you have to look at what's really happening today. Now, I have certain ideas about this, like, well, this is okay, that isn't okay. But those ideas don't really matter, because it's already been determined by the social structure. So regardless of what I think, there has been a social structure. Now, some people believe the social structure should be based upon region. So if you have a city in one place, different from a city in another place, this right should be abridged or removed in the place where it is not popular, say. But the problem is that while I do believe in federalism, and it's a good experiment to try various things, you cannot abridge the rights in the Constitution. And so that's where the line is drawn. And so just because California says we're going to count the number of bullets and the kind of bullets you can have, which are ineffective, and this and that, and you can't have this kind of gun or that kind of gun because it looks this way or because it smells that way or because it feels that way or whatever, that's unconstitutional, period. It doesn't matter that is federalism and they want as a state to be able to change that. They can't change the Constitution. Now, some people believe that that's not true, and that's where we have a problem. The problem is in recognizing the difference between federalism and the right of the people. Federalism is what's left over when all the rights of the people are given to them to be individuals. Then, after they have all those individual rights, which you can never take away, you could have some level of federalism, which is only the right of government to govern, not anything more. This is a big deal, and it changes the complexion of what the United States is to go the other way. And it's been eroding in one way or another for a long time. Now, in terms of education, I said I was going to cover this next. In terms of education, this has been even more brutally attacked than it has been on the Second Amendment about guns, etc. Because in education, the right to have public education has become now a forced system in which some people have to participate no matter what, depending upon where they're living and why, and so, and they have no other choice, that they have to, you know, send their kids to a certain kind of quote-unquote public school. Now, I'm not talking about charter schools where there's freedom. That's a good thing. I'm talking about some places where there are no charter schools and where if you don't have a lot of money, you have no choice but to send your children to a school which doesn't give people the ability to think independently and have open-minded teachers. And it may literally teach progressivism and communism as part of the social system. That is ridiculous. And other things that are against some people's religions as well. There are a lot of problems in education today, and this is where progressivism has done the most amount of damage. Most people don't recognize it because they don't go to school. They send their kids there, but they don't go there. Maybe they need to. I would say if you're a parent, go to school frequently and sit in every one of your kids' classes and some other ones that they're not in, and listen to how things are being presented and taught, and look at the textbooks. If you cannot find that there is freedom in thought, and if the people there are doing the right thing in terms of their teaching methods, then you need to do something about it, whatever it may take. Some people may actually have to move, and it may cost them a fortune. But that's way better than having your kids indoctrinated in socialism or communism. Or worse, it all kinds of structure and belief structures that, well, big business is bad, and big government is good, and that kind of craziness. That's being taught. Or making up songs about how they love the president of the United States, or they love this person and that person in some weird way. I mean, these are people that work for us. They aren't people that we worship. Okay, so the process is that people should have the right to go to different schools and have all kinds of different choices in their circumstance. Is that something that we can say is growing or getting worse? And I'm afraid it's getting much worse, and we're losing the battle, so to speak. And that's those are the people coming up to the next generation that may support an awful system that no longer resembles what was the original system created by the founders of the United States or other free countries. Actually, some schools are just totally against free market economy. Other schools teach atheism and claim that they're not supposed to teach anything about God, so they teach anti-God stuff in the textbooks. That's kind of weird. Is evolution wrong? No. Evolution is one of the ways that God created to create things. But it doesn't explain how a self is created in a human being, or what thought is, or what created the consistency that allowed evolution to take place in a time that would have taken 10 times to many more than 10 times longer than there was to do it in by strictly mathematical computations. So it doesn't explain that. What it does do is explain a good model that shows how things in some ways behave based upon what was created by a creator as a system of chemistry and some elements of physics, but mostly biological, organic chemistry. And it gives a good explanation of that, which I think is, in many ways, for people who study it, an eye-opener to how amazing the universe is in its creative element, and that this was not an accident by any stretch of the imagination, because there wasn't enough time to create the accident. I mean, the probability gets into huge numbers against it ever having taking place, which really gives you pause if you're a scientist. But you've got to go deep into it. You've got to look at all the quagmires and strange things about it. Okay, that's why education needs to be open-minded, so that people can find that for themselves, not be forced to believe it, but at least look at the science behind it, because it's science. But look at the real numbers and the real science and say, oh, wait a second, you know, this doesn't fit this model very well. If you say it is consistent with the growing of nucleotides into certain proteins that become certain types of RNA and DNA within certain types of cells, and all this stuff is going on, it's the magic code of how life exists. But how did it do it and know that the world was going to change this way or that way and prepare life to be like that? Otherwise, there wouldn't have been enough trial and error of life to have succeeded. It would have died out. There have been many, many occurrences in Earth's history that would have destroyed all life, except for these amazing, we call miracles. They aren't miracles, it's design. But people will look at that, and they can come to their own conclusions as long as they are given the equipment to learn how it works. Then you can come to your own conclusions. That's why you don't have to force people to do anything, because they can think, provided they're taught. And they're only taught half of it, and then the rest of it is ignored. And the other half that's ignored is about the inconsistencies, about the odds being so far against life having succeeded. That is the part that needs to be examined more closely. And some books do this, most don't. So it's a problem. Now, that's not the only problem. Evolution is far from the real most serious problem. The most serious problem has to do with social issues. What's a social issue? Social issues are usually governed in most we'll call progressive-type thinking schools by what is just and whether or not, regardless of whether it adds to the beauty of life or helps life to become something greater than it is. The idea is that it has to, one thing is equated to be equal to the other. So, give you an example. People who are the same sex to get married is equal to people who are of the opposite sex to get married. Well, that's not true in a spiritual sense. It should be true in a legal sense. I wrote about this in a textbook I wrote. And I said that people who want to be married, so to speak, in a regardless of what their background is, if they want to be married, they should be able to have the same benefits of marriage that people who are heterosexual, and if you're homosexual, you can get the same benefits, all the same benefits. But I also suggest, and I've done this on a number of shows, that people should also not be licensed to be married. I think that you should have an agreement, a contract, that the government recognizes giving certain people rights, regardless if they're the same sex or opposite or whatever, different races, makes no difference, to be married by that terminology. But the spiritual union of marriage should be something that is outside of governmental control and have nothing to do with it. And if some people want to have a spiritual union based upon their spiritual beliefs and they're homosexual, fine. As long as they adhere to whatever they believe in, that's okay. Even if they don't adhere to it, it's their issues, right? And if some religions don't want to say that that's what that religion believes, that's okay too. They're all okay. You see, the difference here is that we're trying to make the government control marriage, and it shouldn't. You know, the Defense of Marriage Act, which is now being attacked. The best thing to do is to not defend marriage, to just simply say, if you're married, these are the federal rights you have, and you could be married in any number of different ways or fashion. It just means you're committed to living a life together, which joins together certain economic and legal issues and gives you certain legal rights. It doesn't mean that the government recognizes you as being something special. That makes no sense, but that is what, unfortunately, we've moved down that path in the wrong way. And then it does, and has, for hundreds of years, denied the rights of homosexual people, of some people of different races, and people even of different religions in some places. So this is a thing that we really should be careful about. And it shouldn't be something that is involved within the educational system one way or the other. And unfortunately, it's in New York and certain other states, it's in battle. It makes no sense. And in other places where they're, we'll call it, very conservative, they do the opposite. They condemn those who are, quote-unquote, different race or different sex, or the same sex, actually. So it's something that we shouldn't be dealing with from, like, this is what the government says you can or can't do. It should have absolutely no relationship to anything like that. If we're going to give certain people rights by being together, then we should give all people the rights by being together. But it shouldn't be polygamy, because the rights that the government says you get are by commitment to an individual. Soon we're going to have people saying that they want to be polygamous, and then you get into social justice. It's coming. And that's going to be an interesting fight. It may bring out the difference between individual and group levels of equality. All right, so it's an odd way to bring it out, but it may do that. And it's probably something that is going to eventually enter into some schools where there's freedom to think and discuss this sort of stuff. If you go to a school and you can't even talk about the stuff I just said, how in the heck can you be learning how to think? How in the heck can you ever understand what other people are thinking? You'll only learn one way, whatever that is. Okay. And if we're going to really make some headway about changing the present level, we'll call it, of moving towards a tyrannical system that is going to do in the Constitution and do other things here in the United States, which is going to affect the whole world, by the way, there are some amendments that would be pretty helpful to add to the present Constitution, not defense of marriage, obviously. I think that law could be repealed and it not do any harm to anybody. And it would do some service, possibly, to everybody. But some of the things that should be part of the Constitution, in my opinion, is an absolute level of government size determined by at least three different departments or part of government to determine the gross national product. Now, why would that be? Well, if you base it upon the size of the economy, the government then becomes reactive to the needs of people and not reactive to the needs of itself in terms of having authority and control over us. My suggestion is that at the present time, and maybe for all of time, the government be about 14.3% of the GDP of the United States, and no more than that. It could be less, but no more. That would be the maximum level, unless there is declared war or some other such vast national emergency as to be affecting more than half the GDP of the whole country. And if that's the case, then there can be a brief years or months or 2 years time of suspending the idea of this absolute 14.3% of GDP. Now, why 14.3%? Because that's 1/7 of the economy, and the government should never be greater in percentage than 1/7 of the whole country. And that 1/7 has to do with metaphysical principles of division of the seven kinds of energies that affect us because they come from effectively seven divisions of time and space. That's dimensional. It's very hard to understand without me spending too much time on it. And you can listen to other shows where I talk about the expression of God through form. But at any rate, let's get back to the most important principles. So if we're going to limit things, that should be it. And then the other thing that would be part of that amendment is that the government can never go in debt other than times of war, extreme emergency, as set forth by Congress. It has to be declared by Congress, not by the president. And so this is the safeguard. And my suggestion is that this be significantly considered. It would probably take 5 to 10 years to enact such an amendment. All amendments I'm going to bring up tonight would require that, most likely. But it could be done more quickly if we reach a real crisis, which we are headed for, and I'll talk about that too tonight. All right, so here's where the benefits would be. Limited government, which was the first concept, believe it or not, in the Federalist Papers, of the people who wanted to create a federal government. They said it had to be limited. Limited in size and scope and not intrude into the lives of people. Oh, boy, if they were around today, would they be flipping? We're not even in the same ballpark to those times. We didn't even have a standing army at that time. And they didn't want to have a standing army. They wanted an army only as needed. Because nowadays, one could argue that that's a impossibility with the way the world has developed. But regardless, the basic idea is that a government can't be controlled by the people if it has sufficient money to make itself more and more larger in size and more powerful, because people don't have a chance against that kind of government. So you have to have what I'll call to be an artificial, but sort of not artificial, a size of government to prevent this from happening. And that was not put into the original Constitution, but I think it is needed today. And it needs to have a balanced economy where there's no borrowing of money, because the borrowing of money eventually leads to the digitizing and printing of excessive money, which destroys the currency and destroys not only the United States, but all of the world. The United States is a world currency which eventually will affect everybody by everything we're done. And we are on our way to complete ruin because of this. We can't stop ourselves any longer because the government is so big, there's no way to stop it. It just keeps using more and more resources, and therefore gains more and more power, and people can. It's a runaway thing. Only an amendment will probably stop it. And it has to be in the same amendment that anyone that tries to supersede or go around the amendment is guilty of treason and being against the Constitution and is immediately removed from office. So you make it so onerous to try to get around this that nobody's going to try. And because they'd be immediately impeached, which would be a good thing. Now, there are a few other things that I suggest that would be a good change to the Constitution. Originally, and this was argued in the Federalist Papers, the Federalists were the people who wanted a centralized government. Remember that. So they weren't the people who were against government. They were in favor of government. But what they said is, we don't have to limit the terms of how long someone is going to be a congressperson or a senator. They didn't even want to limit the term of the president. They didn't. But because they thought that the right of the people should decide how long a person is in office, and that's based upon their votes each time. Well, they didn't understand then that there would be such an ability to control the messages of politicians and the ability for politicians to use propaganda because of changes in technology, radio, television, the internet, that it would become much easier to get elected, much easier to stay elected. And because of cronyism, it would be easy to get larger amounts of cash than they assumed. They assumed a less corrupt government than it actually turned out to be, almost within 10 to 20 years of the inception of the constitutional federal government. So that's a terrible thing. That was a bad outcome. So we need an amendment that makes term limits on congresspeople and on senators, probably 3 terms in Congress and 2 terms in the Senate, that's it. And, yeah, you could still run for president, and maybe that still would remain 2 terms. But the whole thing needs to be limited to some number, and I'm suggesting those, because it prevents people from being able to become entrenched enough in the cronyism to be corrupt enough to be able to still become elected indefinitely. Now, there's a disadvantage to this. Professional politicians know a lot about politics, but they also know a lot about foreign policy, the economy, all kinds of other things that a new person would have to spend a lot of time to get up to speed. But here's my point. You could literally require that people go to school if they are elected, because there's a time before they're elected and when they start, to learn as like a cram course more and maybe stay in school for the first 6 months of being in office, to learn more about what they are going to be involved in making decisions. Require it. You have to pass tests and at least have some basic understanding of this stuff. That's not such a bad thing, and it would improve the quality of our politicians while they couldn't remain in office indefinitely, getting rich and finding political means of taking over. This isn't such a bad thing, and it would remove a lot of other factors. Now, besides elected office, I also think that the concept of career government workers should also be limited and removed. I think a career in government should be limited to like 7 to 10 years or something like that. And then you can't do that same job anymore, and you're going to go do something else. You could go to a different government job if it isn't closely aligned with it, possibly. Now, why is that? Because part of the cronyism is supported by people who are protecting their jobs and attempting to gain favors and be able to sell favors because of that. So there's a lot of problems in that. So what I'm suggesting is a government that is virtually dismantled in its permanency and protects the people in its temporary nature. That leads to a destruction of tyranny. And if you look at the opposite of this, which would be imperialism in terms of one country towards another, but also in terms of its relationship to government in itself and having a virtual king or emperor running things, that the reason those governments never change and they are so strongly entrenched is because it protects itself. So we would be doing the opposite in this this amendment, you see. So this one amendment would take care of all the things that I just described. It doesn't have to be exactly as I described it. The concept is really the big deal. And it's something to consider, because if we don't do something like this, we are headed for a dictatorship. And I'm going to get to that I'm going to do a little commercial of my own in a few minutes, and then we'll come and look at what we can do to change the real hornet's nest that we're in, probably a nest of rats as well. So looking at it from the standpoint of, well, gee, that would be a pretty interesting kind of way to change the Constitution. I don't want to change a lot of things. I just want to change the things that are really, really, really important to make sure that we don't go down the road of dictatorship and tyranny. Okay, what else would I suggest? Well, one those couple of things right there would do a heck of a lot to make a difference. Believe me, it would make a huge, huge difference. There probably is a need, and this goes against some of my grain, as they say. But I look at this in a very open-minded issue. There needs to be probably an amendment giving the rights of what it means to be an individual and having liberty, life, and property. This is a kind of big amendment, to say the least. Now, what would that mean? It probably means that most of the things that people say are bad for people will not be illegal anymore. And that could be a lot of stuff. Things that I really dislike, drugs of various natures. Also, potentially, up to a point, the right of a person to choose to not carry a penis, up to a certain point. Now, I've suggested in what I've written, based upon soul contact, which is a whole other metaphysical principle, that abortion probably be cut off between 16 and 18 weeks. Because after that, eventually you get into not only the point that we are going to be able to have viable babies that are born at 20, 21 weeks, but it also means that the soul has connected, the self is starting to develop, even in a very minimal way, within the fetus, which to me at that point we're really talking about a person, an infant. When there's a self, there's an infant. Now, how do I know that the self exists in the womb? Because if you play music, you do certain other things, the infant responds at that time. And it doesn't respond, the fetus doesn't respond before that, and also it doesn't have a future benefit before that. But also I know it from a more metaphysical side of understanding how the structure is designed between a soul and a human. Too metaphysical for tonight's show, but definitely important, and you can read about it in some of my writings. You don't have to believe it. It's interesting to look at it and say, well, this could be true. So I'm suggesting that, and now for a lot of folks, that's going to be a rough one. I don't think the government should be involved beyond what I just said in terms of telling people what to do with their bodies or not, or what to do with virtually anything that deals with liberty, life, and property. The government is supposed to be out of that business. And that means that there needs to be an amendment to protect that, and there really isn't. Now, that it goes deeper, unfortunately, because it will get into a lot of questionable behaviors of people did a lot of harm to themselves. My suggestion is rather than have governing, you have to do this or that, it'd be just a lot of education, and let people know by informing them. We have a lot more ways of doing it now. The internet is tremendous. It could help to let people know, well, if you use this drug, this sort of thing is likely to happen. And there's evidence to support in other countries that have tried some of this that you don't end up with more addicts or more people hurting themselves than you had before. You just end up with less arrest and less destruction of people's lives from government intrusion and sometimes less crime. So that's another thing to consider, that the very fact that you're creating more crime by the present mode of operation should be an eye-opener, a concern for everybody's welfare. So I want you to think about that. Now, does that mean that I feel that that's good? Oh, it doesn't feel good to me, but I look at it from the standpoint that there probably is a very good argument to allow people to have almost every bit of freedom that we could possibly squeeze out of living together. Will it mean that there might be more automobile accidents or other things? I'm not sure of that. I think that the main difference is going to be that some people are going to need to probably be a bit more open-minded and not be a Budinsky as much about what the law says in the world, and to recognize that most of the time, the law should not be involved in virtually most things. Okay, so I want you to think about that, and those are kind of interesting amendments. There's a few others that I've suggested in the past, but I think those are enough for tonight's concept. And I want to just mention to you that, you know, in I mentioned guns earlier. And if you have thoughts about, well, I'd like to have a little more information about guns and gun ownership and what laws it means to have a gun, you might want to listen to a friend of mine's show. It's on 1100 KPNX Phoenix, and it is simulcast over KKTG radio.com. I'm reading this because, of course, I don't have it committed to memory. And it's on Sundays from 12 to 2 p.m. in Phoenix time. So you have to check out Phoenix. Phoenix doesn't go on daylight savings time, and that confuses a lot of people, even for this show. So be careful about the timing. And Kate Kruger is the host of that show. She also has many different people on with different ideas. So it's a kind of open discussion show. And it's called Talking Guns with Kate Kruger. And it's the kind of show that I think might be helpful for people who are trying to wade through the Second Amendment and all that other stuff. And you can get email to her at talkingguns@gmail.com. Talkingguns@gmail.com. You can actually communicate with her. And again, Sundays, 12 to 2 p.m., a lot of people are open at that time. Even if you're back from church or if that's where you went, you may have time to listen. And you can like you can to this show, get on the Internet, or if you have local radio in the Phoenix area, 1100 is an easy AM radio to reach. Also, Jim and Kate Kruger own a place called Derby Guns, and that's at 2515 North Scottsdale Road, number 9. You can, if you want to purchase a gun and you live in the state of Arizona, or if you live out of state, you can actually work with them too, but then you have to have somebody who's licensed to do the legal work for you in the state you're from. But you can buy guns there and other related supplies, ammunition, etc. Be aware, though, there is a shortage of everything dealing with anything with guns at the present time. It's not even easy to find ammunition or a lot of other stuff. And they have a phone number. It's 480-874-1383 if you would like to talk to them about that part of what they do. But mostly what I'm, of course, referring you to is listening to the show, Talking Guns. And maybe at some time in the future I might even visit there and talk something about what I'm talking about tonight even. Maybe. We'll see. But so Talking Guns is something that Kate's been doing for a number of years now, and it's been really a successful show. So it's something that other people find is helpful to gain some understanding of what it means to be able to have and hold and use arms. Okay, getting back now to what I was trying to, we'll say, model for us about what the future is going to look like. At the present time, the present administration, which is highly progressive, highly socialistic, and definitely communistic, is getting caught with doing things that are corrupt and criminal, and doing so to remove freedoms from people and to rig elections and do a lot of other stuff. Now, collectively, it's very harmful. Individually, they make it look like, oh, it's just this or it's just that. The difference is that everything that's happening months before the first election, I warned people about. So if I and a few other people that I know of warned people that this was going to happen, and it does, there must be some level of suspicious truth. I mean, it could be just a guess if that happened to get right. But how many times has that happened before you say it isn't a tautology anymore, but it's truth? Tautology just means because of a couple of chance associations, a small concept looks like it's true when it's not. But this is way beyond that, because I've been talking about this for a long time, and sure enough, these things actually are happening, and they have been happening for years, and now it's starting to come out. So what does that mean? Well, we're headed for a conflict. Either these people are fully discovered and people start seeing them as being evil, or they succeed in convincing the majority of people that, oh, it was just a mistake, we really didn't mean to do this, we'll just keep going down this road, don't worry about it, we got a handle on it. And if, after all that has been revealed and a lot more that's coming down the pipe, people still don't say, hey, you know what, I think there's evil going on here, I think we're cooked. I think that's the end of, possibly the end of the United States, and almost certainly a major, major problem for the whole planet. Now, I say possibly the end of the United States. I mean it won't be what it is, a free country anymore. But the way it harms the whole world is that the United States is the leading country in freedom. It was designed to be that way. And once it's gone, once the freedom's gone here, there's no place left that's going to replace it. There's a vacuum then created for darkness to just take over. And that's the real danger, probably worse than whether the United States survives as a country, per se, is it what its role in the world is and how that becomes diminished and eventually destroyed. The currency will go away as being valuable. But most importantly, the principles that I talk about so often, freedom and liberty, and all of the elements that make up what God is, are diminished tremendously. This isn't about legality. This is about spirituality. And when spirituality becomes diminished and eventually replaced by false prophets and false beliefs that are anti-God, the world is in great threat. That's the biggest threat you can have to a planet, not just this world. And you could make this a universal statement about all worlds. Humanity is here to either bring God here, making this like a sacred world, or to destroy it. It can't destroy God, but it can destroy the world. And it will destroy the world by there not being God. Evil eventually destroys everything, including itself, which is so bizarre. But it does. But it doesn't destroy itself until it's destroyed everything else. So you can't say, well, evil will just get rid of itself and we'll be around. No, we won't be around. Everything will be gone. And so that's what we're facing. And I know it sounds so strange to talk about it from, well, it's only like a few years. What, you know, well, it won't be just a few years. There'll be Michelle Obama for president. And there'll be, you know, or maybe there'll be such a crisis that the president will just have to stay on for a few years more. And it's just all kinds of ways of dealing with this outside of, unfortunately, what we think is possible right now. Freedom is easily taken when people cannot see evil. And right now, the minority of people see evil, but not the majority. That's where we are. It has to flip around in the next year or two. Now, I know that sounds like, oh, he's one of these doomsday guys. He's going to just, you know, I even hate saying this stuff because I know what it sounds like, but I can't not say it because I can only say what I think is true. And I so don't want it to be true. So believe me, when I get off the air, I'm going to be saying, boy, I sure hope I'm wrong. I really want to be wrong about all of this stuff. Really want to be wrong. But that doesn't mean I see anything differently. It just means that's a feeling. It has nothing to do with what I see. All right, so why is it we have this problem? What we are, why would the majority of people who live in the United States not be able to see the evil that is there, in my opinion? Well, there's a very good reason for it, and I don't want to make it sound like, there are a majority of people are just, you know, really idiots. No, it's that they are confused about what is the nature of God and what is good and what is evil. If you don't know the difference, evil can look like good, and good, unfortunately, can look like evil. And so, and that's what evil uses all the time. It reverses everything. It's amazing how it gets away with this stuff. For the people who can see it, everybody standing around that can see it, they're like, what the heck? Can't you other folks see it? No, they can't. Because they are confused, but not because they're stupid. They're confused because they have, we'll say, not been given enough understanding, and they haven't chosen to exercise it, both. Giving is usually when they're younger, and exercise it is when they're older. Now, the biggest problem about giving, the part younger, is that the family structures of people, particularly people of moderate means in creation and in income, has been devastated by a government which has deliberately done that. Welfare and other things that are really destructive to families has been using as a political weapon to gain these people's votes. It's given something for nothing, and they'll vote for us. But they're not getting something for nothing. They're getting enslavement and destruction of their life and their self. But that's not apparent. Well, I get food stamps. I get 10 other kinds of things from the government. Disability for this and that. I am so great. It's wonderful. Is it? Is the meaning in life how much you can get from free from the government, supposedly free? Or is it to create more of our Creator in yourself and others? That's the big part. Or is it just to create better something, even if it isn't directly involved spiritually? And that's the problem. And then you could say, well, why don't they exercise a difference after they get to adulthood? Because they were brought up in the wrong environment, because it was the environment where social justice and getting something for nothing was a big part of life. It becomes difficult for a person to shake that, because they become fearful that they really aren't creative. They don't want to rip off the government so much. They don't want to rip off us. They don't want to rip off anybody. They like what they're getting, something for nothing, but eventually it becomes, they don't like that part. It becomes boring, and they miss meaning in life. But the other part of it is they also doubt themselves, because their self is diminished by getting something for nothing. It's a big penalty. As the self becomes diminished, their soul connection becomes diminished, and they become much more fearful of life, because the subconscious part of them, the personality I call it, but you can use different names, grows in the wrong ways. They become disordered in those ways, and their self diminishes to the point where they really are afraid to change. It's that which gives the hold of a system of slavery on them. They're also afraid of death, because many times their belief in God is shaken from this. And they are missing big pieces of what it means to be alive here in this world. Now, they eventually go on to live in another dimension of time and space, the astral and the monastic. Some people call it heaven, but you can call it anything you want. It's another dimensional part of life, which is much larger than here. But this is the difficult place to create the most of God in, the most difficulty in doing so, but the greatest benefits in trying. And so they miss that opportunity. And you can't replace it, because the physics change, and it's not available anymore. It becomes easier to live, not harder. But easy is not necessarily good. All right, so that's our big problem. Yeah, a fearful population enslaved. And right now, it stands at more than half the people. More than half. Wow, this is getting to be frightening. So that's why I'm so concerned. That's why I look at this and I don't want what looks like is going to happen, but I'm also recognizing there's a numerical value to these things, and it can kind of count the votes, as they say. And it doesn't look great. What could change it is the following. In the next year or two, it's going to be more and more difficult for evil to hide itself because it's already done so many corrupt things and it's created so many bad systems. They're going to start coming out. And as those things come out, some people that are on the fringe of fear versus doing something may change their position. The hope is before the next, we'll call it congressional elections, enough people will change so the complexion of that part of government changes. That could make just enough to maybe squeak us through a saving here in the United States, which will have a ripple effect throughout the whole world. We have the worst possible, we'll call it, policies in place in terms of dealing with the rest of the world, be it the bad parts, the parts that are evil, or the good parts. We're dealing with both in very wrongful ways. When our enemies now are no longer seen as enemies, but just as poor folk who happen to be a little convinced in the wrong way to go out and kill hundreds of thousands or whatever people, it makes no sense. But beyond that, there's a much bigger problem. There's an encouragement for the bad to grow and for the good to be attacked. Ooh, how come? Especially when you have all these drones that could kill everybody into it. Because everything is seen in terms of power and tyranny and control of others than doing the right thing. And because what is considered good is actually tyranny. So in other words, tyranny is not really seen as a bad thing. Only when it's caught, it's a bad. Wow, this is really crazy stuff. Holy cow. All right, so we got a lot of backwards things, upside down things. Now, does that mean that all that can't be changed? It can be. But we've got to get to this magic number, and I don't know if we're going to quite get there, because, well, we have to change maybe 5% one way to the other. Well, it doesn't sound like a lot, 5%. Well, we should be able to do that. Yeah, but 5%. Like 15 million people, you know. That's a lot of people to change from one position to another. If you go into voters, it's maybe 7 to 10 million voters. But it's still a lot of people to change. And we don't have even 2 years. We have maybe a year to do this in. So it really behooves us to encourage those people who can get this out to do something about it, maybe teach about it, or if they have any kind of political standing to investigate, to try to bring to the light things that are going wrong. And of course, what I'm saying could be considered heretical or crazy because, after all, if it isn't there, it won't be found, right? I'm always saying, well, this is how I see it, and if it's wrong, great. But if it's not, and we don't get it out in time, it won't matter. Because we're moving in a direction that is actually going to result in the complete destruction of the economy, the freedom and liberty, and eventually shorten the lives of people and remove their right to property. This is about as bad as you can get for people who claim to be part of a free country. And the end is in sight. It's not here yet, but it could happen in 5 years or less. They're really moving very quickly in this. And there's lots of things that could go and change it, but I don't know how many people are going to be willing to risk the need to talk like I'm talking. A lot of people would say, well, why are you on the air for it? Didn't you hear what the IRS is doing? Just from the stuff you're speaking, they're probably going to go after you. Yeah, I know, it's okay. The point is that, you know, I believe we're all here to face this problem. And if you're willing to face it, then you don't have to worry. They could take some things from you. They could even maybe imprison you. They could do this or that. But, you know, in the long run, our time here is very short. And so no matter what happens to any of us because of a tyrannical system, it's of minimal importance to what the whole thing means in the long run and how badly this can go for our children and the children's children, the generations ahead, and then for the whole world. The whole world. Because that's what we're playing with. We're playing with huge amounts of numbers of people. And, yeah, I have to say, I'm not afraid of it. But I know that some people that know me are afraid for me. They say they are, anyway. I'm not. And I don't think I'm important enough to be in that position. But I think, though, the thing that makes it probably the most significant element is if you have any ability to convince even a few people to open their mind, not to do something, but to open their mind, then I would suggest that that is what you do. Now, most people say, well, I can't really do anything. And I don't believe that's true. I think that's the fear. That's the fear. So you've got to examine that kind of statement with a lot more introspection. It's most likely that you're in illusion. Illusion is usually coded with a lot of fear. A lot of fear. If you are in this mindset, you need to also defend yourself. Now, the defense of this position means not being afraid. It means planning and doing what you can so that you can serve other people while you preserve what is the remainder of your existence. If you become enslaved, you will become ineffective. Now, how do you stop yourself from becoming enslaved? I mean, I'm not advocating any kind of violent action against either the government or any individuals. What I'm suggesting here is that teaching and open expression and communication is your best defense. Best. If you think this show is helpful, tell other people about it. Tell them, hey, go online and listen to the show. You did it this day, this week, and go listen to it. Or all the other stuff I've said, or anybody else that you listen to and you think has something to say that is valuable. There's a lot of good people out there that are saying and writing a lot of good stuff. And they aren't necessarily one specific political camp. My leanings politically are more towards libertarianism than, a staunch conservative type of thought processes. Why? Well, because libertarianism was closer to the original concepts of people who were into ageless wisdom back hundreds of years ago when this country was founded. And it has closer to what I would call the truth within it. Truth is something that changes, though. So it couldn't be the truth of then. It would have to be the truth of today. And the truth of today is understanding all the relevant facts and information that you can garner, including some things that I may be right about. I think, though, it is also probably the most relevant for most people who are listening to ensure that they are doing everything they can to not become further encumbered by this system. Now, how do you do that if you're living here or living in any country, some of them much worse than the United States in terms of lacking freedom? Well, the best you can do is to find every way that you can exercise spiritual freedom, and you use that as your stepping stone in the areas where the government or other sources have prevented all other forms of freedom. Work from the idea that you're here to be an expression of a co-creator of God. If that's your real basis of existence, then make your life that, and the rest will fall more equally in place. Don't hide and go to some kind of religious kind of, we'll say, well, I'm going to go to church four times a week and that'll fix it. Because that's really another fearful escape. You know, even if your church is an active voice about freedom, it's not necessarily the way that you as an individual can create more of your creator. And too many people fall into that. And then actually, it's not very much different than social justice and other things that, because then you say, well, only as a congregation can we really enact or do something. And first of all, that's not really the teachings of Christianity, if that's what you're into. But it is a misnomer, a misunderstanding. It's okay to do things together with other people. As a matter of fact, I encourage that because you have a lot more strength in that. But use your individual creative ideas and introduce them and make sure that you're taking individual responsibility for those ideas, not saying, well, I'm just handing them off to somebody else and let them worry about it. That isn't what I'm describing. I'm describing everybody as individually responsible for all elements of what it means to be free. And the expression of that is critical. It's absolutely critical. All right, so can people be free and not have any money or resources? Very difficult. So the other thing to be concerned about is that you are collecting the resources you need to be free. They're going to be individually related to you, and I can't tell you what they all are. But whatever you think you need, make sure you have a resource for having those things. And that's a problem, because people don't want to face that reality. It usually means foregoing something today so that you will have some more of necessities tomorrow, and that others may need the same things that you can sometimes help them out with, so that it isn't a system in which you are responsible for them, but you're helping them to be more creative. That's a big difference. You're not your brother's keeper in my way of explaining it. You're your brother's freer. And that's a big difference. And sister's freer and everybody else. Of course, I'm just using that as in a vernacular, not a specific. It doesn't mean anything specifically like that. All right, so looking at it from that standpoint, if we each did this same thing, we were doing it uniquely individually, but we would be working together to help everybody to be more of a soul, everybody to function more as a being of God than as some kind of weak person who's going to be pushed around and subjected by the government or by anyone else. Does that make sense? I hope it does, because there's a lot to fine-tuning this and to seeing the truth behind all the nonsense that is being heaped out there, you know? And it's quite okay to be charitable, but remember, when you want to give to people, give to them in ways that helps them to be self-created and help them to be giving to others, not give to people in ways that makes them victims of the giving. that you try to control them with, or even if you're not trying to control them, that you weaken their sense of self and actually make them more frightened of life, because now that they've been given even more, they have to worry about how they're going to keep being given to. So you don't want to give people things so much as you want to give them the ability to be creative and to invite them to co-create with you is one of the best ways of doing it. I do that every day. The interesting thing is I see so many people get afraid from that. They just back off. They become frightened to death of it. We hired a couple of different people, we being the people I function with spiritually together, to do some things. And each one of them was too frightened to be creative. Amazing. And so they couldn't do what they were hired to do. How is that helpful? Well, we gave them a chance. We tried to help them. I talked to them. But it doesn't, you know, the thing is you can't force anybody to do anything, because if you do, then you're on the wrong side. So you give them opportunities. You talk to them about how they can function within those opportunities. If they say, you know, I don't want that opportunity, I'm afraid of that opportunity, at least it's an honest expression. Those folks are going to be the ones that aren't going to be helping the world much in finding their creator. It's just the way it is. And the acceptance that some people are going to be along that line, that's fine. We've also dealt with people who have been thieves, and they steal stuff. Nothing is more insane than doing that, because ultimately, every time you take something, particularly from anybody who's trying to do anything good, you're going to lose 10 times that or more for each thing that you take. It's a huge, huge penalty. And sometimes you lose your freedom and you lose part of your ability to do things in life, because, I mean, it's still considered a crime, right? It's a terrible outcome, yet we've had people make that choice. Remember this. The biggest people who are basically criminals are the people who are seeking to remove freedom from others. And sometimes they do that by taking things, because obviously property is one of the things that we need to defend against. But when someone does take specifically property, there are tremendous karmic, what does that mean? Well, it's like a balance, penalties for doing it. And it is like 10 times, it could be many more than 10 times greater, that there is loss to that person over time. Not necessarily whether physically alive, but it's going to happen. And it is, it's a terrible consequence. There is no hell. But there is a tremendous loss of meaning in life, and eventually loss of senses and self that people punish themselves with all the time. And I say there's no hell. There isn't a place where people go that are tortured because they've been bad. People torture themselves by loss of sense, and loss of consciousness and self, which is far worse than the torture that supposedly might take place in a hell anyway. It's the real hell. And that is not a place. It's really a state of beingness. Even those that are trying to be tyrannical now in the world are facing severe consequences from that, but not necessarily here and now. Evil can delay by a very long period of time the consequences of its actions. And when it does this, it causes a great deal of pain and suffering for others in the short run. But by enormous differences in amounts, it eventually will go through pain and suffering of vast greater amounts. But it'll be a long time into the future. It could be well after that particular life and everything that's happened. That's part of, unfortunately for them, the evil system. It eventually fails, and it is terrible for them. But at the same time, even though I can say that, I don't feel some terrible, you know, like, oh, gee, that's really bad. I want to stop him from suffering. I don't. The suffering has a curative element or elements to it that allows these people to eventually get better. And so it isn't, but it isn't hell in the standpoint, well, someone's going to come down and force it. It has to do with the inability to have senses any longer, make them human, yet have enough consciousness so they have to live within sort of a human, a lowered human consciousness in the forms of things that are much less than human for a protracted, very long period of time until they can gain enough awareness to match enough sense and consciousness so that they could be something that is a human again. It's a long road for those that are truly evil. And those who aren't evil suffer the lower consciousness of human life that is still has enormous suffering in it due to enormous forces that wear out their senses very quickly and make their life miserable from one point to the next. Really bad, bad outcome for them. That's the karma. That's the thing I was talking about. Again, it's not to feel bad for these people. I don't really feel bad. I wish that I could awaken them to the betterment of how life could be so much more meaningful and of much, much more, we'll say, joy and bliss within their existence. It's just so unfortunate that so many people, but it isn't the majority, are missing that in their life. All right, so what does this mean in terms of tonight's show? Well, if people are going to be defending their individual liberty, life, and property, they need to do so in a manner that is consistent with what they are choosing to create. This is going to be unique for every person in every family, every group of people that chooses to do anything similar together. It requires a huge amount of time and energy and resources. You should not waste those things because they are going to become more and more difficult to use in the right direction as the economy fails. It is the way that darkness, evil, is working because it's planning on making it so difficult to use resources for the good because it'll be so difficult just to stay alive. That's what it wants. It wants to prevent there being life and property. And once it does that, liberty is a sure shoo-in to take away from people. It also is going to depend upon crises, some of which will be allowed to take place by ignoring the obvious. And so we're going to have attacks on this country where potentially hundreds of thousands of people, not 100 people, may be attacked at one time. And it will be a nightmare. This will give a whole new meaning to the challenge of tyranny and government taking over. People to prepare for this need to be willing to live their life in self-defense, individual defense, rather than to depend upon the government, because the cost of depending upon the government is that you will lose most of what you were talking about, and what you keep will be at huge loss of individual rights. Huge loss. The plans are already in place to take over through this means. Wait for a small nuclear device in Los Angeles or New York or Washington or all of them, and then declare martial law and that we are under attack, and to remove most of the rights and liberties that people think they have, and maybe to suspend elections. After all, can't have an election if every resource has to go to defend ourselves on a group level. Remember, this show, as things may turn darker. Also remember that you've got to plan now, because you won't have the time or the resources available when things get much worse. Now is the only time I can tell you to do it, because if you hadn't done it several years ago, it's getting harder and harder to do it now, not easier. And you say, well, the recession may be over, I can do something. Yeah, you just wait. It's a little low, and you might have some chance to do something that you couldn't have done before. But I can't guarantee that you will get everything done that should be done so you can remain as free as possible. But do everything you can do, and do it with others. It's still individual as long as you are exercising your individuality with the others. Don't think it's not. But don't get fooled in the opposite way and think you can join some group that has some kind of membership online or that runs an ad in the paper or whatever, and just join them and everything's going to be hunky-dory. It won't if you're not willing to creatively be involved and to devote significant resources that you would rather spend on something else and do something else with right now. That is the challenge at this time. And does that mean you should take everything and, you know, board yourself up in some place and just... Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, you won't be able to be creative then. You'll just be sitting there doing nothing almost. You got to balance this whole thing out. Creation means that some of the expense, some of the use is not just to have things, it's to have life and liberty besides just property. You have to balance all those things out. And it requires that you help others to do the same. If you only do it for yourself and a few, maybe family members or whatever, you're missing the whole idea, because you may have that stuff, but it isn't going to be long before everything will be taken from you because the whole country is going to fail. And then it won't make any difference. You've got to help everybody else just to preserve yourself, but also because it's the right thing to do to help grow God. Everybody needs to awaken and be able to see the darkness and do something good. Create things that are beautiful, not just things that are practical. That's part of the system. Something is beautiful when it raises people's senses and makes them be able to see God in new and better ways. Do that, and do it with others, and you'll be amazed at the effects. But take individual responsibility for your level of creation, and never assume that others are going to do it. All right, so what's the last thing I can tell you about? Well, in defense of individual liberty, life, and property, the challenge for most people, besides everything else I've just said, is that for most people, they don't feel adequate, which is, again, dealing with fear, but it has a new kind of fear. They don't feel adequate to be able to make the kind of changes that they perceive or that they actually have some level of consciousness or understanding about in the future. The future becomes too scary for them, and so they want to pretend that everything's going to be okay. If you're in that, I call it the Pollyanna effect, that's the most, we'll say, derailing attitude to have besides just abject fear, which I already talked to you about. So if you're in that vein, then what you really need to do is you need to look into the future and to do as much education of yourself, of everything I've talked about, to see how much of it is true to you. Finding truth in yourself is a critical thing, not listening to me or anybody else. It's finding truth in yourself and checking it out. don't let yourself become too afraid to see what you think eventually is true. If you find that most of what I said, or even some of what I said, is true, then you can say, ah, this is, I can make this my own, and I can do something about it. If you keep blocking it out and saying, well, I'd rather not think about it and I hope for the best, because that's really going to be, so I'm not really adequate to be able to make a difference, and yeah, I don't think anybody else I know is going to be, so I'm just going to kind of give up. Don't do that. Giving up and saying, well, God will take care of everything. But wait a second, how can God take care of everything? If we're here to co-create, and it's supposed to be our responsibility to do something about this, that is a contradiction if you believe that. Now, if you don't believe that, and you do believe that God takes care of everything, then you're into the deterministic model, and, well, then it's going to be what it's going to be, and I guess that might be true. Nothing you say or do will make any difference. But that isn't the model that I think is true, and it's not what I've been teaching. And there's a lot more that will prove that that model isn't true. If we had time, I'd tell you all of those things and don't. So ultimately, you've got to come to this conclusion in your own mind and heart to become adequate to yourself, that you can make a difference for yourself and for others, not just the people you care about, but in the world per se. We all can make a difference, and it's when that becomes the general thought that things are really going to make a change. So we've got the fears that are more basic that I talked about earlier, and then you have this inadequacy, which is not, it is a sort of fear, but it's the fear that even if it's all true, what the heck can you do about it? Because it's this so big and it's so horrible. How could you really deal with it? Well, you can. And people have. And people will. And hopefully you'll be the people that do. And that's what I'm hoping for as I'm finishing out tonight's show. Well, I hope this has made some difference for people. And hopefully you get the general picture of what I've been saying. Now, you know, every show obviously isn't like this one, and most of the time I'm talking about more metaphysical and more truly spiritual things in a sense. But everything is a part of God. And in the physical world, we have to deal with this stuff much more than people in other dimensions deal with it, because this is a world of forces. It's a world where we are came here to deal with this. And whether or not you can remember that or you want to buy it or want to believe it, I think as you get more into what I'm talking about, you will find it to be true. And if you don't, let me know. Because anything that people find and say, well, you know, what you said is just not true, I want to know about that so that I can correct those things that I am an illusion about. We all are in some illusion some ways, and we should recognize that and look for ways to change it so that we can think better, so we can interact better and create better, better being more godly. Well, again, I hope this has been a meaningful show for you and that this has made some difference for the folks who, well, I'll say, are looking to make improvements in not just themselves, but in everything. And if with that thought in mind, I'll end tonight's show by letting you know that I still have some optimism, even though everything I've said has certainly the more negative issues tonight. But I still have a lot of optimism, even though. And all of us, I hope, will make a difference. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.